Chapter 2. 0908 hours, July 2nd, 2553, military calendar. Crime scene Charlie, 104 meters below ground. Montero Cave System, Campos Wilderness District, Planet Gao, Cordoba System. The green digits of the heads-up display inside Fred's helmet showed an elapsed time of 10 minutes and 32 seconds. That was how long it had been since Inspector Lopez had last climbed the slope to peer into the cramped passage, technically a crawlway, where the decomposed body had been found. And now Lopez was back again for the 7th time in 87 minutes, crouching beside him to check on the progress of subordinates who clearly did not need supervision. Under different circumstances, he might have thought she was fond of his company. But Fred had watched enough soldiers fight their demons to recognize what he was seeing. Inspector Lopez had a fear of confined spaces, and it was a weakness she hated in herself. He could tell that by the general tension of her body and the way she always forced herself to stare into the crawlway for a full 60 seconds before backing away. Most telling, though, was her loss of focus. She had stopped trying to provoke him, and Fred didn't think it was because she had ruled him out as a suspect. Inside the crawlway, the deputy inspector and trace evidence specialist were preparing to remove the body. Having already inspected, photographed, and collected samples and evidence from every meter of passage between the entrance and the victim, they were now spreading the body bag over the corpse, open side down, with the deputy inspector at the feet and the trace evidence specialist at the head. The pair appeared to have a surprising amount of experience in tight spaces, for they were working in near silence and seemed untroubled by the smell. Linda's voice sounded inside Fred's helmet. "Lieutenant, I have a third squad runner here," she said. "Private Hayes. He says they've found another body."
"Another one?"
Fred did not bother to speak quietly or hide his irritation. They were on team comm, an encrypted tight beam channel currently open only to Spartans, and to Wendell, of course. As battalion AI, Wendell kept a small presence everywhere, residing in anything that had a gigabyte of memory to spare. "Please tell me you're joking."
"Afraid not," Linda said. "Hayes says this one looks pretty fresh, and it's at Bivouac Site Tango."
"What?"
Bivouac Site Tango was deep in the caverns, a full day's descent below the paved paths customarily used by tourists. A fresh body down that far would have to be a spelunker, or a local guide deliberately challenging the UNSC's no-access order.
"Say again?"
"Bivouac Site Tango." Fred allowed himself the luxury of an unvoiced curse. Another body meant another day escorting Lopez and her team, and on a mission like this one, that was a problem. The 717th was here to nab an ancient forerunner Ancilla, one that could turn out to be the most sophisticated and powerful AI ever captured by the UNSC. It was the kind of operation that could make or break careers, especially that of the mission's brash young commander, Murtag Nelson. 80 military standard days ago, on April 14th, 2553 to be exact, Nelson had been a field analyst at an Oni listening post when a pirate and a Covenant battlecruiser glassed some Forerunner ruins on Shaps 3. Following the bombardment, a strange pattern of transmissions had begun to emanate from the Montero cave system on Gao, and Nelson had hypothesized that a Forerunner Ancilla was responding to the attack. How he had persuaded his superiors of his theory, Fred could not even guess. But there could be little doubt he had. The chief of Oni herself, Admiral Margaret Perengoski, had given Nelson command of the 717th Xenomaterials Exploitation Battalion, then attached Blue Team to the unit and tasked them with helping Nelson capture the Ancilla. But the damn thing was slippery. As an AI, the Ancilla could reside in any electronic device smart enough to host it. And it could jump between devices, which made trying to locate the thing akin to hunting a ghost. Worse yet, it was a couple of magnitudes smarter than any human AI, and about 1,000 times smarter than Fred, so capturing it was far from certain.
In fact, Blue Team and the 717th had been chasing the Ancilla for a month now, and they had nothing to show for their efforts except the casualties inflicted by its complement of sentinel drones. Fred had explained all that when Halal demanded an escort of Spartan IIs, and he had taken pains to point out that every hour the squad spent on security detail was an hour the Ancilla used against them. But Fred's protests had been ignored. With political agitators already making noise about the invasion of Gao, Fleet Comm Brass had been worried that some hardliner would try to spark the second coming of the insurrection by attacking the Gao investigators and pinning it on the 717th. And Fred couldn't say he blamed them. That was how a lot of wars started, with some nutjob kicking a hornet's nest at just the wrong moment. "Lieutenant," Linda asked.
"Sorry, just assessing," Fred said. "What's the sit rep at the new scene?"
A short silence followed while Linda asked for the situation report. Fred could have switched channels and spoken to Hayes directly, but he preferred to keep his communications to the Spartans' encrypted channel for now. There was too much coincidence in these murders, too much that served to pull the 717th off mission. Had Fred been in charge of the investigation, he wouldn't be looking for a renegade Spartan or a full-on psycho. He would be on the hunt for some Gao radical trying to frame the Spartans and make the UNSC look bad. Someone who wanted to pressure the local government into declaring a war it could not possibly win. But what did Fred know? He was just boots on the ground. After a moment, Linda said, "Hayes reports that Mark and the rest of the Spartan Threes are still working with the mapping team."
"Good," Fred said. "What about the crime scene? Is that secure?"
"Corporal Fatus is there with Third Squad," Linda answered. "It's only 10 clicks from here, but Hayes says a lot of the trip is belly-crawling and ear-scraping."
"Very well. Tell Private Hayes to await orders," Fred said. Fatus and his Marines were seasoned recon scouts. They wouldn't have any trouble securing the area. But it was hard to imagine Lopus squeezing through a series of passages even tighter than the crawlway in front of them. "Is there an easier approach to the kill site? One that can be accessed without crawling?"
Linda consulted the runner, then said, "Only the usual route, through Whiskey Victor 77.
Fred felt his jaw clench. That would be entrance 77, located in Wendosa Village, about 30 kilometers across jungle roads from their current location beneath the Montero Vitality Clinic.
"Sounds like we'll be splitting up then," Kelly087 said, joining the encrypted conversation.
Fred's unofficial second-in-command, Kelly was posted at the opposite end of the gallery from Linda, watching their back trail. "If you can get Lopus to limit the advance team to 2 people, Hayes and I should be able to get them to Tango in one piece."
"Affirmative, Kelly," Fred said. "Thanks for—"
"Negative," Wendell interrupted. "You and the Spartans will carry on here, without informing Inspector Lopus or her team of the new body. Major Halal will accompany Private Hayes to the crime scene alone."
"Alone?" Fred asked. "Please clarify."
"You have your orders," Wendell replied. "Clarification is unnecessary."
"It is necessary if you expect me to cooperate," Fred said. "Blue Team reports to Commander Nelson, not to you or Major Halal."
Wendell remained silent nearly a half second, then said,
"As you wish, Lieutenant. Major Halal needs access to the crime scene ahead of Inspector Lopus and her team."
Fred did not care for the explanation at all. "That's a bad idea," he said. "These GMOP people aren't stupid. They'll know if Major Halal tries to hide something." Fred was surprised to hear the Major join the conversation directly, no doubt patched in by Wendell.
"I have no intention of tampering with evidence, Lieutenant.
But I am here to make certain Inspector Lopus and her team don't malign us unfairly."
Fred glanced back toward the main cavern and saw the Major ambling past the vent area, pretending to work the tactpad strapped to his wrist as he spoke into its microphone. There were no Gaos within 30 feet of him.
"To do that," Halal continued,
I need to document the crime scene before the Ministry of Protection inspectors have an opportunity to plant false evidence. Does that meet with your approval, Lieutenant?
Sir, yes it does, Fred said. A normal lieutenant would have been intimidated by Halal's tone. But the day a Spartan let himself be cowed by a keytapper was the day that Spartan needed to turn in his Mjolnir armor. Thanks for asking.
Halal stopped and looked in Fred's direction. I didn't know Spartans came equipped with a sense of humor. Does that cost extra?
No, sir, Fred said. It's more of an operational bug.
Then let's hope it's the only one you have, Halal said. Now you will do as requested, yes?
Affirmative, Fred said. What about the rest of the crime scene tours?
The special inspector is obviously someone who prefers to draw her own conclusions, Halal said. But I gave her an encrypted datapad with a copy of my full report and current notes. I believe she left it on the weasel.
Anything else?
No, sir. That covers it. Fred said. Linda, before Hayes leaves with the Major, make sure you get a map of their route.
Linda's status light flashed green on Fred's HUD. He turned back to the passage, where Veda Lopez's people had finished zipping the corpse into its body bag and were now carefully hauling it toward the entrance. Given the tight quarters, all Fred could see of the operation were the grimy soles and backside of the trace evidence specialist. Still standing next to Fred, Lopez turned and looked back into the main cavern.
Where is Major Halal going?
We've been down here a long time, ma'am, Fred said. He probably needs to use the restroom.
Does he always consult you first? Lopez asked. I saw you looking back toward him. It seemed like you were in communication.
This cavern is considered a conflict zone, Fred said, and Major Halal was unfamiliar with the protocol.
You have a protocol for peeing in caves? Lopez asked.
The UNSC has protocols for everything, ma'am, Fred said. How much longer are we going to be down here?
Why? You have someplace else to be?
As a matter of fact, yes, Fred said. I have a mission to complete.
And that would be?
Classified, ma'am. It had not escaped Fred's notice that Lopez was peppering him with mostly innocuous questions, just to get him in the habit of answering. With all due respect.
Sorry, Lopez said, looking completely unapologetic. I wouldn't want you to give away any UNSC secrets.
I appreciate your concern, ma'am, Fred said. Now about that time estimate?
It depends on the victim.
Lopez looked back into the crawlway, which remained obscured by the trace evidence specialist's rear end. She paused a moment, then said,
I hope you don't mind another question, Spartan, but it's pretty clear you couldn't fit inside that little passage, at least not in your armor. So if something were to happen, how exactly would you protect my people?
I probably couldn't, Fred admitted. But if something were to happen, you can be sure I wouldn't let it happen to anyone else. Lopez raised her brow.
So this something... it's that dangerous.
Fred hesitated, realizing that he had just walked into a verbal ambush. He couldn't admit that he was protecting Lopez and her team from Forerunner Sentinels without telling her about the Ancilla that controlled them, and any mention of either Forerunners or the Ancilla was strictly prohibited under Directive Foxtrot Tango Angel 7012. According to the mission briefing, the people of Gao, like most humans, knew just enough about the Forerunners to understand that the Covenant's worship of them had been a driving force behind the war on humanity. But few civilians understood just how advanced the Forerunners had been, how miraculous and powerful their technology really was, and the Office of Naval Intelligence was determined to keep it that way, at least until the UNSC had cornered the market on Forerunner artifacts.
Come now, Lieutenant, Lopez pressed. You wouldn't be here if there wasn't something dangerous to deal with. If there's any chance it could be who we're after.
Then this would officially be a military matter, Fred said, and you wouldn't be here at all.
and you expect me to just accept that?
I don't have any expectations about what you accept or don't accept, ma'am, Fred said. I'm simply stating the situation. Anything I'm here to protect you from doesn't kill with close-range brute force. That's all I can tell you. Don't ask again.
Lopez narrowed her eyes.
Or what, Fred? Or you'll be wasting your time.
Fred liked her nerve.
She was about half his height and a third his mass even without armor, with high cheekbones and large dark eyes that made her look more like a fashion model than a homicide investigator. And yet here she was, trying to intimidate a Spartan.
Ma'am. My time is my own to waste, Fred, Lopez said. Interesting that she was now referring to him by his first name, and not Spartan.
And until Commander Nelson says otherwise, so is yours. Are we clear?
Clear enough. Fred glanced back toward the primary crime scene, where two pale figures in hooded coveralls were crossing the cavern floor in a grid search.
Does that mean I should have someone prepare a defensible bivouac position?
Lopez studied the evidence search for a moment, then shook her head.
No, they should be finished in a couple of hours.
They? Fred asked. You aren't staying?
My medical examiner will want to start on this body as soon as possible, and I want to see how Commander Nelson is coming along with our facilities. I have a feeling we're going to need a good-sized morgue.
Very well. Fred was just relieved that it would not be necessary to think up another explanation for Halal's absence. The tunnel weasel can return us to the lift.
You don't need to come, Lopez said. I'm sure the weasel driver can find the way on his own.
I'm not worried about you losing your way, Fred said. Fleetcom would have my armor if I let someone take out the GMOP lead investigator.
Lopez's eyes flashed with anger. I can take care of myself, Lieutenant.
I'm sure you can, against threats, you understand, Fred said. When Lopez's expression showed no sign of softening, he added,
Look at it this way, Inspector. On the way back, you'll have plenty of time to rule me out as a suspect.
What makes you think you're a suspect? Lopez asked.
The assignment briefing, Fred replied. The first thing Major Halal said was, Everyone will be a suspect.
This drew a wry grin from Lopez.
Okay. But no dodging questions. I ask, you give an honest answer.
Deal?
Affirmative, Fred said. And you don't even have to advise me of my rights.
This is Gao, Fred. You have no rights.
Lopez looked toward the darkness at the far end of the gallery, where Linda stood watching for the enemy.
Let's start with Major Halal. Where did he go?
I'm under orders not to reveal that, ma'am.
Fred dipped his helmet toward her.
And that is an honest answer.
15 minutes later, the third car had been unhitched from the tunnel weasel and left behind, so the investigative team would have access to its equipment while the tram was away. The bagged body was riding alone in the second car, and Veda and Fred were riding separately on the tractor unit's two passenger benches. Fred keeping watch while Veda studied Halal's report on the military data pad he had left for her. The major's work was good, if preliminary. He had created a timeline of confirmed deaths, including who had discovered the bodies and when the victims had been found, last seen alive and expected to return. He had carefully noted each victim's injuries, highlighting those that suggested a pattern, and he had started a table of suspects, with columns for means, motive, and opportunity. It was basic stuff, but the foundation of any good murder investigation. Atop the list of suspects was unknown Gao radicals. Veda thought the motive listed, apply political pressure, was probably sound, but the means seemed unlikely. Because the victims had suffered tremendous physical trauma, Halal had entered industrial exoskeleton, pneumatic tools. Veda couldn't rule out either possibility until she inspected the access routes to the murder scenes.
but it seemed a bit far-fetched to think anyone could sneak such heavy equipment into the cavern without being noticed, or leaving an obvious trail of impression evidence. Next on Halal's list was unknown UNSC personnel. The entries were similar to those for an unknown Gao radical, except the motive was listed as possible psychological problems, with a note to have Wendell check the battalion's personnel files. Veda suspected a soldier might have access to a weapon or piece of equipment capable of crushing femurs and disjoining limbs. But again, there would be the problem of sneaking it into the cavern unnoticed, and common marines were seldom granted the amount of privacy it would have taken to stalk and kill so many victims in less than 2 weeks. It would bear checking into, but Veda would need an additional reason to make this a high priority. Halal's most detailed notes were for the Spartan twos, Fred 104, Linda 058, and Kelly 087. Clearly the Major felt, as Veda did, that with their Mjolnir power armor, the three Spartan twos had the most convenient means to commit the murders. But he had asked Wendell to cross-reference each of their known locations with the timeline of the killings, and while there was quite a bit of play in some of the estimated times of death, it was clear that no single Spartan II had the opportunity to commit every murder. They had all been accounted for at the time of at least two deaths. The last item read simply, redacted. Opportunity and means were both listed as question marks, and motive read, diversion? Veda reached over the back of her seat and showed the data pad to Fred, placing a finger beneath the redacted entry. Can you tell me what that would be, Lieutenant?
Certainly, ma'am, Fred replied. Classified.
Veda scowled.
That answer is starting to get old, Fred.
My apologies, Inspector, Fred said. I'll try to think of a more entertaining way to say it.
Veda sighed in frustration.
Not necessary, she said.
But whatever this redacted thing is, we could designate it Target Alpha, Fred suggested. That way we can be clear what we aren't talking about.
Fine, Veda said. What is Target Alpha?
I can't talk about it.
What would Target Alpha gain by causing a diversion?
You'd have to ask Target Alpha, Fred said. Or Major Halal. He's the one who made the note.
But this Target Alpha, redacted, whatever it is, could be responsible for these killings?
Major Halal seems to think it's a possibility. Fred paused, clearly thinking it over, then said, and I can't say for sure that it isn't. When he didn't elaborate, Veda decided to keep pushing.
But?
But it doesn't make sense. The last thing Target Alpha wants is to draw attention with this murder spree. Fred moved his finger to the top of the list and tapped the unknown Gao radical entry. That's who we're looking for.
How do you know?
It's not complicated, Fred said. They're the ones with the most to gain from this mess.
That's not evidence.
Fred shrugged. You'll find the evidence, he said. That's what you do.
It is. But what if the evidence doesn't point to a radical? Veda asked.
What if it points to a Spartan? Fred pointed at the data pad. It looks to me like Major Halal has ruled out the Spartans.
I'm not the Major, Veda said. But let's talk about the rest of the battalion first. How large is it?
About 900 people.
900? You're kidding me.
No, ma'am, Fred said. Three combat companies, the scientific units, a security company, and a couple of support companies.
And what about equipment? Veda asked.
Is there anything someone could use to crush bones this way and tear off limbs?
Probably, Fred said.
Nothing special springs to mind, except maybe a cargo walker or a munitions loader. But it would be tough to get any of that equipment down here without being seen.
How big is it? Veda asked. Would any of it leave tracks?
They're powered exoskeletons, Fred said. About 3 meters tall and probably 2 wide. The cargo walker has legs and pads.
It would be fine on the concrete, but if you stepped into the mud or rocks, you'd be in trouble. The loader has tracks. It could probably go anywhere, but you would know it had been there. The trail would be obvious. Veda nodded. It was about what she had expected, but she would assign someone to check out the rest of the battalion's equipment.
What about weaponry? Veda asked. Any close quarters stuff that could cause what we're seeing?
No, ma'am, Fred said. Any battalion has plenty of weaponry that can tear a person apart. But our weapons are designed to kill quickly, efficiently, and usually from a distance. Anything designed to cause a slow death like that? Well, you won't find that in a Marine armory.
Veda paused, then said, Then I guess that leaves your own Mjolnir armor. How many Spartans are assigned to the battalion?
Fred did not answer at once. Veda let her breath out.
Please don't tell me that's classified too.
It is, Fred said. But I have clearance to share personnel information with you. There are 8 Spartans attached to the 717th.
8?
Veda checked Halal's list of suspects again.
Halal only lists 3.
You, Kelly 087, and Linda 058. Probably because we're the only 3 who wear Mjolnir, Fred explained. The other 5 wear SPI.
SPI?
Semi-powered infiltration armor, Fred said. It doesn't significantly enhance strength or agility, so I assume the Major saw no need to create a separate category for the Spartan 3s.
Why not? Veda asked.
The Ministry of Protection had shared their intelligence on Spartans, so she knew that there were different kinds, and that both Spartan 2s and 3s were unimaginably strong, quick, and deadly. Unfortunately, that had been about the extent of the Ministry's intelligence. The file had speculated on the possibility of special selection criteria and biological enhancement, but otherwise seemed to have no explanation at all for their prowess.
From what I understand, both Spartan 2s and Spartan 3s have superhuman strength even without powered armor.
That's beside the point, Fred said. None of us has the strength to crush femurs or rip arms off with our bare hands.
Veda considered Fred's reply, trying to figure out how she could check the claim, then finally realized she couldn't,
unless she found documented proof of a Spartan performing a similar feat in the past. She simply had no way to prove or disprove the lieutenant's assertion.
You're sure about that? Veda asked. You've seen what even normal people can do when their adrenaline gets going.
Inspector Lopez, I'm sure. Fred's tone grew stern. Spartans may be superhuman, but they're not serial killers. The tunnel weasel entered an immense chamber filled with the sound of roaring water, then followed a gentle curve toward a well-lit loading zone in front of the glass-walled passenger lift. 50 meters ahead, just beyond a stone-paved seating area filled with tables, benches, and a now-closed concession stand, a huge waterfall lit by golden spotlights plummeted out of the cavern's ceiling and disappeared through the floor to a pool somewhere far below. As the tram stopped, a pair of UNSC Marines in black BDUs stepped away from the lift entrance and saluted Fred. Both had sandy, short-cropped hair and square chins. In fact, the only difference Veda could see between them was that one had brown eyes and one had green eyes.
"Welcome back, sir," said Green Eyes. He glanced at the body bag in the second car. Do you need to make an action report?
Not at all, Private. Fred stepped out of the tractor unit, slapped his battle rifle onto the magnetic mount on his armor, and retrieved the body bag from the second tram car. He draped it over his forearm like a waiter would a towel. She's not one of ours.
Good to hear, Lieutenant.
The soldier nodded to his brown-eyed companion, who stepped back to the lift and jabbed the call button.
Have a good trip, sir.
The lift opened. Veda scrambled through the door behind Fred. She felt her stomach sink as the lift car started to rise, and she quickly found herself staring down on the golden-lit waterfall from above. Once the lift had departed the cavern and entered a stone shaft ascending toward the surface, Veda opened a file on the datapad.
"Lieutenant, maybe you can give me the names and identification numbers for those Spartan 3s you mentioned," she said.
I just need to cross-check their locations against the timeline so I can rule them out.
I'd be happy to, Inspector. Fred sounded like he was speaking through clenched teeth. Tom B-292, Lucy B-091.
What about their last names?
None, Fred said. Mark G-313, Olivia G-291, and Ash G-099.
And the B and G prefixes? Veda asked.
They're training companies, Fred explained. Beta and Gamma. The lift reached the surface, and Gao's orange daylight flooded into the car. After the darkness of the caverns, Veda was blinded for a couple of seconds, and when the door swished open, she was surprised to hear angry voices echoing across the courtyard. A small hand grabbed Veda by the biceps and quickly drew her out of the lift.
Better move along, ma'am, said a female Marine. We've had reports that some of them are armed.
As her vision cleared, Veda saw a wall of UNSC Marines standing 50 meters away, holding their assault rifles at port arms and facing the Montero Vitality Center's closed entrance gate. Beyond the soldiers, on the other side of the wrought iron gate, she could see placards and banners waving against a curtain of jungle mist. Fred stepped out of the lift behind Veda, still carrying the bagged body over his forearm, and turned toward the interior grounds of the spa.
I hope you work fast, Inspector Lopez, he said, because this kettle is about to boil.